That's my kind of SportsCenter update to begin the show today. By the way, in case you're wondering what happened to Alberto, let me explain it to you folks. Okay, in our control room, we have different buttons, different controls. And there are ways to hear the radio station from the radio feed, which is 7 seconds behind because of the delay. And there are ways to hear the radio station from the live feed, which is what the board sounds like. Okay, unfortunately, Adrian is out taping an interview right now with Scotty Walden. I've got the boys back across the glass handling the show with Alberto and Michael. And the board was on the radio broadcast feed versus the on-air live program feed. Meaning, when Alberto started talking, he didn't hear anything. And then 7 seconds later, it would come back in his own ears. And that threw him off to the point where he took off his headphones, couldn't monitor anything. I had to go across the glass, switch it back to the regular mode, and now we are all set and good to go. I almost want to give you a mulligan on this and have you do it again. Because I feel like if you were doing SportsCenter now, so you could actually hear yourself when you're speaking instead of having your own words come back into your ears 7 seconds later, it would be a different result than what we just heard.
Yeah, I had prepared them and stuff, all the stories, but then nothing was playing in my ears, and yep. I was watching the bar load the stuff up, and I was like,
I knew exactly what was going on. In fact, when I saw you stop and then kept talking, and when I was listening, nothing was coming out of the audio at that point. I was like, uh-oh, we're in delay. We're on the radio feed. You don't have it switched over. So I'm going to give you this, okay? I'm going to give you an option. Do you want to redo right now and start like this point, like right over again with SportsCenter and the headlines and get a second shot at it? Or do you want to just put it behind us, forget about it, and move on with the show?
I can run the stories.
Well, it's your call. This is your choice. I'm leaving it completely up to you.
Yeah, let's run that again. Let's
all
run
right.
a little.
Let's do a little mulligan. Pretend okay. like the show's about let's, to start right now. Here we go.
Let me find the SportsCenter music though.
Oh, that's tough. That's important
there it
too.
Is. Okay,
ready? Go ahead. Give it a go, man. Give it a shot.
Wait, hotkeys might not work right now.
Oh my God.
Yeah, does it work?
You know what? That's a sign from God. That's saying, don't put him back on the air to do this again. Let's
right.
just let it rest.
God's
and
right
yes,
now.
That's right. That's right. We'll be okay. We will be okay. So don't worry about it. That's a sign from up above. That's the way I look at it. But hey, good start to the show. It's a very, this is what it's all about sometimes, live radio. And listen, I'm going to tell you guys something. This is the honest to God truth. And I think I've told you this before. I don't know if I've told both of you this before, but I've told at least to you, Alberto, that I've had so many partners on this show do SportsCenter with their microphone off and not even realize it, where they're doing it, they're talking, and yet the only thing you hear is the theme music and their voices are nowhere to be heard. And I had to like walk into the studio in the middle of SportsCenter, punch up the microphone so that all of a sudden they'd be on, then I'd walk right back. And the cool thing is this. Most of the time, I'm very hands-off. I don't interfere with you guys. I leave you be. I let you do what you got to do. I don't want to distract you. But for the sake of today's show, I did want to get us into the live studio program feed rather than the 7-second delay air feed, because I don't need to be listening to myself 7 seconds after I talk, and it sounds like I'm on an AM radio. So instead, we are now where we need to be. I'm happy about that. And welcome, everybody. Good to have you back here on a Friday afternoon. Michael Plundo is with us with his photographic memory. I learned that yesterday. I'm not going to challenge him anymore. He did enough. And he's just shows me that he's one of those rare people that when he looks at something and studies it once or twice, he doesn't forget it. And I'm talking about details, order of things. It was pretty impressive yesterday when we were talking about the roster rankings from Pro Football Focus. And at first, he was on his phone looking at them and kind of blurting in the answers. And then we said, put your phone down. And we started bringing up teams, and he was nailing them all, like in the order. They were ranked in this Pro Football Focus article. So I learned my lesson. I'm not going to challenge him anymore. He proved himself. So that was a good, you know, a good learning lesson for me on the show yesterday. I like that. And now we get ready to roll through two hours and 30 minutes because we have the return of baseball. Major League Baseball is back. The Giants, Arizona Diamondbacks beat the Cubs today 5-2 at Wrigley. We've got games that are going to be starting here in about 30 minutes or so with Philly and Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Washington, and then in the 5 o'clock hour, more games. And the 6 o'clock hour, more games, including your El Paso Chihuahuas back home against the Sugarland Space Cowboys. Tim Haggerty will have the call, and he'll also have story time for us beginning in our 6 o'clock hour. So I'm excited about that. Adrian will, in fact, be heading back to the station once he's done with Scotty Walden. And that special interview he is recording for a special Minor Talk early edition. So excited about that as well. So, yeah, as you might imagine, we're busy. We have a lot going on today. A lot's still to come. We have a good article up on the website from Joe Rod. Joe Rodriguez gave us a little recap of the FC Juarez loss to Pumas, previewing the matchup for Locomotive FC going up against Phoenix Rising FC. And also, we used some of Alberto's clips, video clips, on Twitter and X following the match on Wednesday. And let's just say that FC Juarez's head coach and technical director, Mauricio Barbieri, did not hold back at all. In fact, Barbieri went off on his front office. Basically, the fact that he has no flexibility with his roster seemed to blow off a lot of steam, was frustrated, and we've got some of those reactions for you inside Joe's story, courtesy of Alberto. But you were there. You had a first-row view at everything. And as you might imagine, this is not the kind of start FC Juarez wanted to their season. In fact, I don't want to say that that it's come off the rails, but there is obvious concern when their head coach, who hasn't even been there for a year, goes off on the way his team has been built.
Yeah, and he's really disappointed with the off season, and that affects everything that's happening to this day. And so he just wants to make it known, look, I had a lot of plans for the offseason. They made a lot of promises, and unfortunately they didn't come through with them. So he speaks up finally after the exit of Andres Fassi. So Andres Fassi, earlier in the week, on Monday, around Monday, I was watching, Monday night, I was watching a local newscaster from Juarez. Mm-hmm. He was doing a show, and then someone commented on his show saying, hey, on this television show, they just said that Andres Fassi is leaving the team. Do you know anything about it? And he said, you know what? Let me end this. The next day, it becomes official. Andres Fassi, he leaves the team. So he was the one that was in charge of player transfers. Remember when Luis Rodriguez was here, he was saying, I'm not in charge of player transfers. It's because Fassi was.
So here's the deal. I've been told from Joe that Fassi has not officially been relieved of his duties, and as of now is still running the show for FC Juarez, at least for the time being, because the club has not issued a statement saying otherwise. So if Fassi left Juarez and went back to Argentina, that's one thing, or wherever he's staying right now. But we don't know yet if, in fact, he is no longer in control when it comes to player acquisition and player movement. So that is one storyline to keep an eye on as they get ready to host Club America here this weekend at Benito Juarez Stadium.
Yeah, the thing is, for me personally, it's just kind of like, it's obvious that something, there's been a shift at the in behind closed doors, because he's now speaking up about the
I understand where you're going. Because you think that if Fassi was in control still,
he wouldn't be speaking.
Exactly, that Barbieri would not be leaving. But on the contrary, though, remember, even if that is what we assume, which could be true, until the club issues a statement saying that Fassi has been relieved of his duties, we don't know for a fact if he is no longer in control. Look, I've seen teams in the past, coaches just rip is their management. It's weird. It doesn't happen very often, but sometimes when coaches lose their cool and they just go after their front office, either they think they're going to get fired or they just don't care. It's rare, but it's happened. So, and remember this too. This is also really interesting. Barbieri did not mention Fossey by name in any of the statements that you had video of in his post-game press conference. So the fact is that if he does address him by name, then maybe you're right. Then we could say that he's on his way out. But maybe he was just so frustrated about things and with the loss and everything else, he just had to blow off some steam, did it. Maybe Fossey, for all we know, is taking a break but hasn't been relieved yet. There's a lot of unanswered questions right now with FC Juarez and what's been going on with this club.
Yeah, and you know what he also spoke about in the press conference? Like you said, he didn't mention anybody by name, but he did talk about how he feels in relation to his players and asking them, you know, just 3 days ago you played a full 90, now I'm asking you to go out there again, and you know that we haven't reinforced the team. We had 6 exits and no one came back, and now I'm asking you to go out there and kill yourself, and he talks about how there's a strain there, right? And I think that that's really important because I'm sure that they must be voicing things maybe to him, and now he feels, hey, I understand where you're coming from.
So here's the other question with that, okay? And that is, is it all on Fossey's shoulders? Because ultimately, I mean, it cost a fortune to put a team like this in the top division of Mexican professional soccer. And we know that Mountain Star Sports, who owns the Chihuahuas and owns Locomotive FC, owns FC Juarez. So the question is, are they ultimately responsible for not investing in expanding the roster and giving them the kind of depth they need to absorb the losses? Are they trying to keep the bottom line at a certain number? Or did the front office just strike out in trying to put together a playoff type of club? We don't know the answers, but guys should not have to play 90 minutes at a time because eventually you are going to be gassed, especially when you're going up against teams like Pumas and teams like Toluca and all these others that have a bench that can suddenly bring in players in the 50th, 60th, 70th minutes and fresh legs that have an opportunity to try to win a match late.
Yeah, so just to boil it down, I guess, to its most basic terms, the coach is just pointing out, look, Luis Rodriguez has freed himself. He said, I don't deal with player acquisitions. When he was on the show, that's what he said.
He told us that.
He
exactly
told us
right.
That. So we don't know who's dealing with player acquisitions, and no one has stepped up and said, it's my fault we haven't gotten anyone. But at the end of the day, the truth of the matter is the team lost 6 players, and it added none. Mm-hmm. And now there's injuries to the club,
yep.
And you're in the middle of a season that's about to turn into a tournament. And at the fact of the matter is, your coach is saying we don't have players, we don't have enough legs, and that's the state of the club. Whoever takes responsibility, I don't know.
How does that happen though? 3 games into a season. I mean, we're not talking about 3/4 of the way into the season, or even at the midway point, or even at the quarter point. We're talking 3 matches in. The season just started. So if you've got a coach saying that this early, that and by the way, I mean, it's not like the team he has now isn't giving him everything they have. They are. They are absolutely giving everything they've got to this club, but there's only so much they can do when they're shorthanded. And you know what? When you're healthy and shorthanded, that's one thing. When you're injured and shorthanded, that's an even bigger story. But right now, we know one thing. They have to make changes quickly, because otherwise the season's going to get out of hand. And I don't think Mountain Star Sports wants to spend a few more million dollars in basically the penalties, because all of a sudden when you finish below the line and you have to pay essentially millions of dollars to the league as opposed to relegation, you want to avoid that as much as possible.
Yeah, you definitely do. And look, the coach said it in a very poetic way, and I encourage people to go check out the videos on Twitter, because you can see he's visually frustrated, but he said it himself. The tournament passes us by,
mm-hmm.
and as do the points.
That's right.
And so it's like, there's no players here. We're running out of players. Guys are getting injured. Guys are tired. We're playing games on short turnaround, and the tournament passes us by, as do the points. So it doesn't look good. So I'll be surprised if they pick anybody up, because when he was directly asked, is there anyone you're looking at? He didn't allude to anybody, but he did allude to having conversations with the head office about bringing certain players in to reinforce the team, and that didn't happen, and it's disappointing.
If you want to get a chance to hear from Barbieri after the match, you can read Joe's column. We've got Alberto's videos inside. There's even English translation, English subtitles. It's perfect, so you can actually see the transcription of the comments. It's all up with a Joe Rod story that we put up just less than an hour ago on the website at 600ESPNElPaso.com. Adrian is back. He had the chance to talk to Scotty Walden today. You look like you've been through hell. I can't
it's
even
so
explain
hot.
It. You look disheveled.
I do.
Your immaculate hair is out of place right now. I can see that for you. Yes, it is hot out there. But I'm excited. I mean, when we come back from the break, can you tell us all about how the conversation went today with Coach Walden?
Yes, and it's time to win the West, Steve. So let's do it.
Fair enough. Time to win the West. Right now, let's win the traffic battle and hope it's a very slow day on the streets and roads of El Paso. Here he is, Charlie One, with our first of many traffic updates. You know, have the opportunity to get some quality time with UTEP Set Football Coach. How'd the day go?
It went great, Steve. We got a lot to catch up with head coach Scotty Walden. First and foremost, you might hear a commercial with Scotty Walden on our radio station here soon enough. He'll be dropping by as soon as CUSA Media Day is finished. So
when is that? When is CUSA
I believe
Media
that's next week, Steve, because excellent. The first day of practice is August 1st.
Ah.
So we're talking 2 weeks right now.
Yeah, it's right around the corner.
Yeah, and football season is practically here right now. It was good to be out at the Larry K. Durham Center just to see the beautiful view and see the Sun Bowl and everything. EA Sports maybe got it almost perfect, except for the trees that EA Sports College Football 25 has on the mountains. That's the only thing.
They added trees. Did they add a lot of trees, or did they kind of add a few trees?
It makes you feel like you're in Colorado or something like that,
really?
You know? Or maybe like Redoso, something like that.
Now, are the trees behind the press box, or are the trees out beyond the east side of the stadium with the Franklin Mountains with the large Franklin Mountains because
the
stadium is built into the mountains, so where do they put the trees?
They put that exactly what you were saying on the east side of the mountains where you could kind of see a little bit, and then they add a little bit of a mountain on the west side too. So if you're looking from the video games perspective on the south side, you see trees atop the mountains.
So they did a good job. They just made El Paso look a little greener than it really is what you're basically telling me.
Yeah, and I was looking at the mountains and I was like, oh, I see the green. I see the greenery. It's there. No, it's just the desert.
Nice.
Stuff. It's okay.
How long did you get a chance to spend with Coach Walden?
So I spent about 30 minutes with him. He had a meeting run a little long, but got a lot of information. The biggest thing to note, Steve, they're going to be hosting a big prospect camp coming up next week. This is an official deal for UTEP. And then they're going to have some official visits, some high-level official visits that day as well. They hope to get upward to 10 commits before the season even starts out of the class of 2025. And what does this mean for UTEP? Well, it means that they're still committed to recruiting young. They want the freshmen. They want true freshmen out of Texas high school systems. And they want these guys to be committed before the season actually begins. So they've done a really good job of encouraging a lot of recruits to come out to this camp next week. And remember, this is coming off a first-ranked finish per 247 Sports and Rivals when it came to their team rankings.
Do we know how many so far have committed verbally to UTEP prior to December?
Right now, it's a handful of players here for the class of 2025. So that's not too bad, right? I mean, if you think about it, class of 2025, these kids are entering their senior years right now, and they're just getting ready to kick all of that off.
So really, this prospect camp is a huge one for UTEP when it comes to signing, because this could be the camp that really helps them address who they want to offer for 2025.
Yeah, and remember, now the early signing day is all the way up until December. So if that's the case, UTEP's got to make these these pipelines, these routes now. They have to develop these relationships with these players right now. So I thought that was pretty positive. I think they're committed to all their philosophies, which is recruiting, you know, flip the roster, commit to the rebuild, commit to the whole change of process. And, you know, the big question is, what's the expectation expectation going into this year, year one? It's so hard to tell. You can kind of go any different way.
And how many prospects are they expecting to be in town for the prospect camp? Did they give you a number?
They didn't give me a number. I think they're still waiting on some VIP prospects. That's what they call them. So these guys are like, I mean, I'm guessing 3-4-star prospects who are coming out of East Texas. Maybe even some from our own backyard here in El Paso. I mean, Steve, we've got a Power 4 commit out in Manny Fuller in Del Valle, who just committed a couple weeks ago. There's a guy in Morales. He's an offensive lineman at Franklin. He's received Power 4 offers already. So there's a lot. And Jake Fetty, don't forget about him, top prospect in El Paso, quarterback for Del Valle. He's fantastic. Davion Singleton, Ray Estrada out at El Dorado. I can go on and on. But, Steve, there's some really high-level prospects out of El Paso who are getting a lot of attention. And I think UTEP hopes to bring some of those guys there.
But no one from El Paso has committed yet to the class of 2025. Is that correct?
That's exactly correct. Okay. In fact, class of 2025, the first commit was Manny Fuller, again, from Del Valle, and he committed to Utah. So yeah. UTEP's trying to get into the race with some of these other guys right now and also get these guys to commit here before the season starts.
Okay, so that's coming up here next week with the prospect camp. And then before you know it, they'll have their training camp getting going, and they'll be preparing for August 31st, which is right around the corner. That's for sure. Did you get a chance to go deep into the positions with Scotty, or is that something that a lot of the jobs are still up in the air heading into fall camp?
I think a lot of jobs are up in the air, but we went position by position with him. And so, Steve, we're going to talk about the standouts on defense. I mean, that's where it starts, right? It's Maurice Westmoreland at the outside linebacker, pass rushing position, edge rush position, whatever you want to call it. A.J. Odom's the standout corner. He's returning for the minors as well. Katie Johnson today was named on the All-Conference USA preseason list.
Saw that.
Defensive lineman for the minors as well. So UTEP's got these pieces defensively, I think, that stand out talent-wise. I mean, you're returning almost four starters back from last year's team, but you also bring a lot of experience. Tavita Tafuna on the defensive line. Sione Tangaua on the defensive line. You got Logo Va also on the D-line. So they've got a lot of experience, not to mention all the incoming transfers they brought into the mix. They've got Kofi coming in from Colorado. They got Dylan Turner also from Gardner-Webb, the linebacker position, Nate Diamond. Head coach Scotty Walden is most bullish about the secondary, which I was really impressed by. When he was naming it from top to bottom, you got Amir Boyd-Matthews, Josiah Allen, and Oscar Moore returning from last year's team. And then you're bringing in guys like Corey Chapman. You're also bringing guys like Xavier Smith into that secondaries group as well.
We got a lot more to talk about as Adrian gives us a little sneak peek about what's going to happen when his conversation with Scotty Walden drops here next week. But before we do anything, let's get right back over to Michael Plundo, standing by with this bottom of the hour SportsCenter update. Nicely done, Michael. Appreciate that as we keep things moving. 32 past the hour. We're talking UTEP football as Adrian coached Scotty Walden for a conversation that lasted 30-plus minutes. When will the conversation run on demand for our listeners?
So I need us, you and I, Steve, to go through ours. And I hate this podcast, but we have to do it. We have to finally rip the Band-Aid and do it. The game-by-game podcast where we go game-by-game for UTEP football. I think this is year three of us doing it. And I think years one and two are big swings and misses.
Well, mine's going to look a little different this year than it did last year. That's for sure. So, yeah, looking forward to it. Maybe we sit down and do that on Monday.
Yeah, let's do it Monday. That way people can listen to all these conversations coming up Tuesday, Wednesday on demand, wherever you listen to Minor Talk in the podcast channel. We'll also throw it up on our website as well, 600ESPNElPaso.com, to get people ready.
I saw this today, the predicted order of finish for Conference USA football. This is according to the league's media members that cover their institutions. Let me first say this. We are not part of this group. We have never been part of this group. In fact, I think what happens is it's very possible that the sports information director and the radio play-by-play person could be responsible. So I think this is probably going to be Drew Bonney and John Teicher for UTEP, and then every other school has a seat at the table as well. But Adrian, unless CUSA contacted you, unbeknownst to me, we had no say in this whatsoever.
No, and I'm glad we didn't, Steve. This preseason poll went all over the place. I'm all against it. I think it's terrible. I think they did a horrible job on this one right here. So I'm glad our names are not on this one right here. It says no limits on us. There's a big limit here for some of these teams on the preseason poll.
Seriously, let me go through these real quick so people can hear it. There are really three teams in the league that the media believes will be standouts and then everybody else below, okay? Liberty is projected number one. They got 18 out of 21st place votes. Western Kentucky was second with two votes.
So I wonder where those came from, huh?
Yeah, exactly right. So Liberty and Western Kentucky, 1 and 2. Jacksonville State picked third in the league, and actually only 7 points behind Western Kentucky total. So it really was a close race between Liberty, Western, and Jack State, and then there's a huge drop-off. Now, of the huge drop-off, there is only a total of 17 points separating 4 and 8. So let's go through that list for a second. Middle Tennessee State is projected to finish fourth. New Mexico State and Sam Houston State are tied for fifth. But Middle Tennessee has 98 total points. New Mexico State and Sam Houston have 97. So really, you could put those three teams in a hat, pull out a winner, and that's how the league media feels. So those are the first six teams in the league. Again, Liberty, Western Kentucky, Jack State, Middle Tennessee, New Mexico State, Sam Houston. Here are your bottom four. La Tech finishing seventh. FIU projected to finish eighth. UTEP projected to finish ninth. And Kennesaw State dead last in Conference USA. I guess if there is any kind of a message here for Scotty Walton, nobody believes the Miners will do anything this season in terms of football.
You know, the first thing that jumps out to me, and again, this is all bias aside, it really is, anybody could do their research on college football, and if anybody does, you're realizing that New Mexico State team this year from last year's team? Steve, that's not even the same.
It's trash.
Why are they tied for fifth? Yeah. They didn't do their research. You and I could have done this as far as ranking, and we probably would have reasonably put New Mexico State 8th, 9th, 10th maybe. And that's no knock to Chavez over there and what he's trying to do with that new team. Jerry Kill left that program last year, and he took everybody with him. There's nobody on that squad returning from last year's team, it feels like, really. Yeah. They've got a couple of guys here and there. Their running back is back. But, you know, Steve, I feel really bad for Tony Sanchez and what he's doing out at New Mexico State. And just, you know, it's going to be a tough roster. A lot of overhaul over there.
I agree. And unless Tony Sanchez knows more than we do, you just don't expect to have the kind of mass exodus like they had and be able to finish half in a top five. Now, let's also though state this, okay? We all believe that other than Western Kentucky and Liberty, this is not a good football conference. This is going to be one of the worst group of fives in the country. So the chances, I mean, look, could New Mexico State win 5-6 games? Absolutely they could. This is not a league that is going to surprise people, really. And so along those same lines, UTEP could surprise some people. Sam Houston could surprise some people. So could FIU. And that's the thing, is that really there could be a ton of parity after the top three teams in Conference USA.
Yeah, I mean, even if you were to do, like I was trying to do top five quarterbacks in CUSA, there's this like roundtable group that is asking like different conference affiliates to vote on this. And after you get behind Caden Salter out of Liberty, the standout quarterback for the Flames, and you get behind, the Western Kentucky quarterback room, it's got two guys and it's led by TJ Finley from Texas State. He's probably leading the way over there. Outside of those two right there, you don't really know any other starting quarterback. There's all jobs up for grabs. So, Steve, if you're going to rank this list and you're going to say there's a huge gap behind Western Kentucky and Liberty, then it's really up in the air
because
we don't really know who's even being the quarterback at most of these spots here in Conference USA.
And by the way, let me clarify. I mean, I called New Mexico State trash. That's probably not accurate. To me, Conference USA is trash, okay? And I'm not talking about Liberty and Western Kentucky, maybe to some extent Jack State. I'm just saying that the league as a whole, when you weigh it top to bottom, is going to be way down this season. I have zero expectations for anybody in Conference USA, which is one of the reasons why, to me, everybody is wide open. I feel like the whole league outside of maybe the top couple are like that, and maybe after third, fourth through tenth could be as up in the air as anybody.
Yeah, I mean, what if Liberty runs the table again, right?
Yep.
Sneaks their way into the CFP, right? If they're 12-0, the only Group of Five team to do that, and they get into the college football playoff by that default. Western Kentucky, maybe they're like 8-4, 9-3. Jack State, I could see them getting back to a bowl game, assuming that they qualify for a bowl game. Last year they did not qualify because they made the transition from FCS to FBS. But those teams right there, I feel like you could pretty much say they should have a winning record this year. Aside from that, maybe a bunch of 6-6, 5-7s, 4-8s, and that's pretty much it across Conference USA. You might see the parity really fall after, from teams 4 all the way through 10.
And I think they're going to beat each other up in conference play. I don't see really a ton of teams now. Liberty, they're Liberty. They got tons of money. They're not afraid to spend. They believe that they should be probably playing this year in the playoff if they can be the top-rated team of all the Group of Fives. So let's just take Liberty out of that equation for a minute. You still have Western, Jacksonville State, Middle Tennessee State, and everybody else. I mean, we could be talking about a league where everybody is just beating each other up with the exception of Liberty come conference play.
Yeah, not to mention how much will home field advantage have, right? I mean, last year we talked about it in basketball. How many teams lost on the road? Now it's going to be intensified in Conference USA, knowing that they're really teams are traveling all over the place. You got FIU coming to El Paso this year. How tough of a travel is that for them? And then UTEP is traveling to Lynchburg, Virginia this year to take on the Flames of Liberty. So a lot of tough travel in this league.
Did you mention the 9th place predicted order finish to Scotty during your conversation today?
Yeah, he did, and he was not happy about it at all. He was saying, he was saying something along the lines of, this is bulletin board material. They like to go into the season, with little expectations like that, because this is going to just fire them up.
The truth is, nobody in this league cares what he did at Austin Peay, and they don't care what kind of offense he runs, and they don't really expect him to do anything here in year one because of the roster overhaul. So if there's ever a chance to go into the season with nothing to lose, everything to gain, it's going to be his minors this season. Despite the fact that fans are way more optimistic in year one than this media poll.
Yeah, and just buy into the longer haul, right? I mean, in October, regardless of the record, this team has to be motivated by the rebuild, be motivated by the fact that they just have been expected to lose all this time. So if they have that kind of motivation in October, it'll help them out when the schedule softens up a little in November, aside from that road Tennessee game.
More with Adrian on his conversation with Scotty Walden, and more on the CUSA preseason goodies that were released this morning. But first, let's take a time out. ABC 7 News is next right here, 600 ESPN El Paso. 49 past the hour as we continue here on Sports Talk. Adrian Broaddus was over at UTEP today at the Larry K. Durham Center talking to head coach Scotty Walden. Miners predicted 9th out of 10th in the media poll today from Conference USA in their preseason poll. They had a bunch of things they actually decided to announce today, including their preseason watch list. And in case you're wondering who from UTEP made the preseason watch list, I'll tell you. On offense, running back Javon Jackson, who played at Austin Peay last year, as well as lineman Otis Pitts. Those are the only two minors on the watch list on offense. As far as defense goes, the aforementioned A.J. Odoms is on that list, along with Katie Johnson. And I believe that is it. And then Angelo Tejeda on the special teams list. Just out of curiosity, where's Mo Westmoreland?
Yeah, great question. The problem with Mo is they throw him at the bandit position, Steven. He gets lumped in with the linebackers. So it's like, he's going up against the linebackers, and I'm thinking to myself, well, wait, no, put Mo as what he was last year. Throw him in the D-line. He's all CUSA. I mean, this is a first-teamer for all CUSA. Again, CUSA preseason watch list did not do it right here, Steve. I love KD Johnson. I think he's going to have a fantastic season. He's also a Kilgore product for UTEP at the D-line, but Mo Westmoreland deserved a spot before anybody of those all those five members that you just mentioned right there.
Could not agree with you more, and it is a little weird. I'm not going to lie to you. It is a little weird, but, you know, that's when have we ever said Conference USA is normal as a conference?
Or gets it right, because this conference right here feels like all too often gets things wrong. And maybe that's the problem with schools all over the place, Steve. You don't pay attention as much to UTEP players. Yeah. You don't pay attention to the Miners defense or offense if you're a Liberty CUSA member, or if you're a Kennesaw State member who's just joining the conference right now. It's hard to gauge these players and teams.
You know, I started thinking about this. Has Scotty Walden ever even dealt with pressure as a head coach? Because it seems like every time he jumps into a situation, he succeeds out of the gate.
Right. I mean, think about the first interim coaching job that he had out at Southern Miss. I mean, over there, expectations were already out the window. That season was over, and he's filling in as a young, interim coach at that time for Southern Miss and just finishing out the season. No pressure whatsoever. You look at Austin Peay and what he's done to reshape that program. He built it from the ground up. Not a lot of pressure right there. Pressure's on right now, and it's from the fan base who's had pressure on this football program really since the Mike Price days. They wanted to see consistent winning like they saw in 2004-05, and yeah, that's the standard that some fans here in this town hold this team to.
That's true, because, I mean, in Austin Peay, he went 4-2 in his COVID year, which was his first year there. Then he goes 6-5, then he goes 7-4, and then he goes 9-3. So he won and was better every year. He only had a chance to coach four games at Southern Miss, and that was also in that COVID 2020 season, and he went 1-3. Well, we all know what a disaster COVID was for everybody playing college football that year.
Right. I feel like also expectations are just virtually a little lower when it comes to FCS programs. And so when you take it to the heights that Austin Peay had under Walden, like he had in this past season, I think that's the peak that you get right there in the FCS ranks.
And remember, Dana Dimmel had tons of expectations last season, and we know how that went. He went 3-9 and lost his job. So really, this time around, I feel like, I mean, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel almost like UTEP doesn't have a ton of expectations in year one. There's 7 road games, only 5 home games. They realize the roster's been overhauled. It almost seems like they just want entertaining style of football, fans to get excited, win some games in the process, and get people thinking that, you know what, next couple of years are going to be good.
Yeah, this is the springboard for the future, right? This is the first year laying the roots. Maybe you go out and shock some team, whether it's at home or on the road. Maybe you go out there and lay an egg. But what has happened over the past 10 years for UTEP? They've had some duds of seasons. They've had some really tough losses and stuff like that. And I think this coaching staff right here is trying to do something that the previous two coaching staffs really haven't done, and that's win at a high level.
I don't know who you're going to shock at home, because they don't play anybody at home this year. If you think about it, their road games are their games. I mean, they have Liberty on the road. They have Western Kentucky on the road, Nebraska, Tennessee, Colorado State, New Mexico State. So, I mean, those are your games right there. I mean, you look at the home schedule, they're all essentially winnable. I mean, the Miners could win 4 games. They could win at home and then lose on the road. Who knows?
Right. I mean, this is kind of interesting, because a team like Kennesaw State, a team like, you know, even a hungry team like Southern Utah, the home opener itself, not necessarily layups, but you're right, the tougher opponents on the road. I feel like the FIU games, those are the type of games that you'd expect UTEP to win. Yeah. It's just so tough to gauge where this team is going to be like in October.
Totally agree. All right, we got 1 hour down, 90 minutes to go. Hour two coming up next. Your phone calls as well, 505-6009. That's 505-6009, plus Oscar Arrieta doing something very, very cool involving UTEP, and Adrian will tell us about that as well. That's still to come right here on 600 ESPN El Paso. Hour two of Sports Talk is underway. Welcome back, everybody, from the River Oaks Property Schoolyard Sports Studios. Steve Kaplowitz, along with Adrian Broaddus, Alberto Dueta, Michael Plundo, We'll have Tim Haggerty joining us in our 6 o'clock hour for story time and get you ready for Chihuahuas baseball. We got Watermelon Party coming up tomorrow at Western Playland. I will be out there from 4 to 6. Excited about that. I'll be on the microphone where I belong and have some fun out there. Alberto's going to be there. Adrian's going to be there. Is Plundo going to be there? Michael, are you planning on being at the Watermelon Party?
I unfortunately have work, and I will not be able to attend.
Oh, man. Well, that's all right. We'll be thinking of you. You'll be there in spirit, Michael.
Maybe on your way home, Michael, you can catch some of those fireworks as you head out to – you live in the kind of the area for Western Playland, so maybe you'll see some fireworks on your way home.
Yeah, not too far from Western Playland at all. It's about 10 minutes from where I'm at, so I could definitely see them.
All right, good. Looking forward to that because there will be fireworks at the end of the night, and excited about all of that as well. We talked UTEP in the first hour. We talked FC Juarez as well, but I want to get back to UTEP football for a second because Adrian was out with Scotty Walden today previewing the team. It'll be coming up on our expanded minor talk extravaganza. It's going to be the podcast and all podcast because it's going to be a full-on preview edition of the program. We get to go game by game. I'm looking forward to that. I know you're shaking your head saying you're not looking forward to that. Well, I mean, look, the truth is this, all right? And this is the hardest part about this season. We have no idea what's going to happen. I mean, none. Think about it. New coach, new formations, new personnel. We've never seen it before here at UTEP, which means our guess is just it's exactly what it is. It's a crapshoot. You know, and here's the crazy thing. We had 6 years of Dana Dimmel. I thought by year five, I knew what to expect in year six. I couldn't have been farther from the truth. So the point is, enjoy it for what it's worth. Us just going through each game, talking about opponents, trying to predict a record, and going from there. I'm just going to tell you this right out of the gate. I am not going to expect six or more wins this season. I can't because their schedule doesn't allow that for me. I just don't see it. Seven road games, this team is historically not a good road team at all. I don't see it happening. So you want to know something? There are going to be a lot of doubters. I'm a doubter in year one. Not saying I doubt Scotty Walden and I doubt the team. I just think that, you know, winning games is going to be the hardest part for this team. They're probably going to be entertaining, fun to watch, do a lot of things that fans are going to be excited about. But it's so difficult going from that to saying they're going to win 6, 7, 8, or 9 games in year one.
Right, and I actually want to see which are some of the younger guys that start to rise up with this team. I think that's going to be the most encouraging part moving forward. The interesting thing, when I was talking to Coach Walden, this team has almost 30 seniors, and which is weird. Like some of the guys, Oscar Moore, he's a senior, hasn't really played a share of games, but is projected to be a starting safety for UTEP. He was returning from last year and is coming from Kilgore College, where he actually had his first 2 years of collegeability at. So this is just an example of other players on this roster. Javon Jackson's another graduate transfer from Austin Peay. This is his final season here with UTEP. They have a lot of seniors on this roster, but I'm curious to see which freshmen, even redshirt freshmen, do we start to see on this program and we start to see on the field. And I think you start to see that when adversity hits, Steve, and you start to see some of the younger players just get thrown in the mix to see what they could do.
I wonder, of the 11 starters on both sides of the ball, offense and defense, how many do you really feel good about right now that if the season started today, you can say this is your starter at this spot?
I could go, all right, that's a really good exercise. I could tell you that there's probably three returning starters on offense, and it starts with Otis Pitts III, so he'll be at that right guard position. When you look at the running back position, Javon Jackson will take that starting role right there. Quarterback, I'd say it's 60-40 Cade to Skyler at this point, but I mean, I think the coaching staff would tell you it's closer to 50-50, right? And that's just my assessment off the spring game. Really limited sample size that we actually got to watch there. But, you know, if you talk about Cade returning, that's the second starter back from last year. The only other starter at the wide receiver spot I could see playing from last year is maybe Judah Ezinwa.
I don't mean, like, okay, so let me rephrase this question. I don't mean How many of the 11 guys do you see starting? I'm talking about right now, newcomers, returnees, whatever.
Right.
When you look at this team, how? Because I could look at Trey Goodman, and I'm going to say he's a starter. Okay?
I see what you're saying. Solidified
yes.
starters. Yeah.
So I'm wondering how many positions on the let's start with the offensive side of the ball. How many positions on the offensive side of the ball, starting positions, are truly up for grabs heading into fall camp?
Look, I'm cheating.
You, oh, well, that's good. You should be. I mean, okay. you need some semblance of a two deep right now at your disposal as you talk about this.
Right. I think the I think you started it right. Trey Goodman. You could say he's a solidified starter at the wide receiver spot. Same with Javon Jackson.
Yep.
Those are guarantees right there. I'd say right guard is solidified with Otis Pitts III.
Yep.
Isaiah Wright at the left tackle spot is done. He is starting at the left guard spot with Brennan Smith right next to him. I think that's solidified as well. I don't know who's the center. That's up for grabs. I don't know who's going to be the right tackle. Maybe it's Ivan Escobar. Maybe it's Joseph Immediato. Maybe it's one of the other, you know, Austin Peay transfers they received. The other wide receiver spot's wide open. So you're talking about two through four as far as the wide receiver spots, and the quarterback spot's open on offense.
So we could be talking about basically five of the 11 are still roster battles to be won in fall camp on offense.
Yeah, and that's a lot, right? If you think about it, you want to go in. I think the defense is a little bit more solidified. I'd say Brighton Thompson, Katie Johnson, Mo Westmoreland, and Sione Tonga'ua or Tavita Tafuna on the defensive line is solidified. I'd say that D-line is done. The linebacker spot up for grabs, Nate Diamond, Trey Dunson. You also have Kobe Turner at that spot as well. And then the corners, Amir Boyd Matthew, A.J. Odoms, those are locked in. That's done. So I'd say that's almost signed, sealed, delivered. Safety, Xavier Smith versus Corey Chapman is going to be a really good battle. And then Oscar Moore gets the other safety spot in my eyes, along with Josiah Allen getting the nickel. So defense, I'd say there's only legitimately three battles going on.
But that's good. That means of the 11 spots, eight of them are pretty much locked down as long as they're healthy. So you could see a defense. And by the way, the fun part about this defense is they're going to have to play as fast as the offense because look at what they're going up against in practice. They're going up against this high-tempo offense. So, and there are a lot of teams in this league that are going to play the same kind of way UTEP plays, up and down, up and down. They're not going to take their time. They're going to want to get up to the line of scrimmage and throw plays. So maybe this style will actually benefit UTEP because they're going to have to be in great shape knowing what they're going up against.
So on the defensive side, I can tell you this, from everything that we've heard, this is the most frustrating defense to go up against because of the risk they'll take. They're going to take the turnover risk. You're going to see interceptions this year. You're going to see things like forced fumbles and stuff. They might give up big plays at times, but it's because they're going for high risk, high reward situations. I feel like if you're the offense going up against this defense, you're getting frustrated because if you're going up tempo, starting to move the ball, and then you throw an interception, well, then that's all this momentum for nothing. But that's also a testament to the defense and how far along they are right now being aggressive and forcing those turnovers.
Defense also has to be in better shape than the offense, because if the offense does its job, that means they're going to try to get up and down the field and as fast as possible and score points. Okay, assuming they do what they need to do, they're going to run they're going to try to run plays as quickly as possible, get up and down the field and score points. If they fail, chances are they're three and out, which means the defense is going to have to get right back on the field and keep playing. So if you think about it, the real pressure this season is going to be on that defense, because chances are they're never going to win a time of possession battle on offense because the offense isn't designed to do that. It's designed for a much quicker pace of play, high tempo, as many plays in as little time as possible. So defense has to be ready this year.
I'm a little worried when it comes to how much the defense will be on the field in those first four games, Steve. And that, again, it's a sign of the three and outs. It's a sign of maybe an inexperienced offensive line going out there for the first time in those first four games. And when you have the defense out there in those extended minutes, the depth is going to be tested. So that D-line is built for it. I believe that. I think they can go too deep for sure on their D-line. The linebackers concern me a little bit. And same, you know, Coach Scotty Walden talked very highly today about the secondaries, but I still get a little concerned just knowing how pass-heavy CUSA likes to be, you know, throughout the league.
All I know is this. Again, it's going to be a complete change for fans. I think they are going to be fun to watch. Like you said, it could be frustrating at times because, like you mentioned, if you give up big plays on defense, that could come back to really hurt you. But that's the style. It's a gambling style of it's a big play defense. And when you have a big play defense, you have to take chances. If you want to sit back and be conservative, then you're not going to get as many turnovers. You're not going to get as many sacks, but you're going to try to limit the damage. And this is the opposite. They want to make as many big plays on defense as they will on offense.
You know, what's interesting is, so defense, not so secretly, they like to run the 3-3-5 stack, three men up front, three linebackers, and the five safeties, corners, or secondary members outside. I'm just concerned with just how they'll stack up physically when they run that 3-3-5 stack. However, the success story is there with a team like Jacksonville State. Last year, they ran a 3-3-5 under Rich Rod, and he loves that. You just throw a lot of different schemes out there. I get a little concerned when it comes to UTEP, Steve. Size, physicality, how do they stack up with some of the better teams across Conference USA? And it's something you can't coach. You can't coach somebody's size, weight, and physical traits.
Did Austin Peay ever go up against Jack State prior to last year? Were they ever, the last couple of seasons that Scotty was there?
I
would love to know if they ever went head-to-head against that team.
Yeah, especially because that program, man, is on the rise. Just, this is their second year in Conference USA. Last year, a great outing. No one expected anything from them. I think that's also something to pave the way for a team like Kennesaw State, right? Like, everybody's just writing them off. Everybody last year at this time wrote off Jacksonville State. Yep. Nobody thought that they would do anything, and they had a great team last year.
Maybe that could be the thought process for Scotty Walden. Same exact thing as Jacksonville State and Rich Rod a year ago. He feels that this could be them here at UTEP, because even though the Miners were in FCS, they have a complete overhaul of their roster. They're bringing a different style of system. They're bringing the best players from their FCS team that won 9 games. And Alberto, I think you're chomping at the bit for something to say as well. Go right ahead.
Yeah, so I looked it up, and Jack State and Austin Peay, they have played 3 times since 2019. They played in 2019, 2021, and 2022. In 2022, Jack State beat Austin Peay 40-16.
Wow, that's good. That's a good one right there.
That was in 2022.
Yeah.
And I believe that was also the season that Austin Peay finished with 7 wins. I think they went 7-5 that year. So, but they did not beat Jack State, and 40-16. And by the way, we could be seeing some 40-16 games this season for UTEP. That could absolutely be something that's, that becomes a reality for Miner fans, which is one of the reasons, before I went on vacation, I wrote an article on the website. I haven't even talked about this yet. This is one of those hidden articles, like an Easter egg. You got to go find it, because it's probably buried now among so many articles. But basically the message is, don't get your hopes up in year one, where if things don't work out right out of the gate, Miner fans are already thinking that this program made a mistake.
You know, another thing, Steve, you're exactly right on this, because the blowout games will deter fans.
Yes, they will.
High scores, you know, early in the season, 38-7 loss to Northwestern. That game felt a lot closer than that score indicates, but fans get turned off by that. They also don't like seeing a home loss to UNLV 45-28. Those are ugly losses right there. I'm not saying that a Jack State game is an ugly loss, but if you allow 40 points as a defense right there, that raises some eyebrows, and you want to be a team out there that competes, keeps the game close, maybe have a puncher's chance when it comes to fourth quarter. Again, I don't think this team is going to win maybe even 5 games this year, but I want them to be competitive in each game, and maybe that's a lot to ask.
And be exciting to where the fans feel like they can sense good things are coming here in the next few years.
And that's got to radiate with recruits, right? It's got to be the energy and the momentum that they build with the fan base, you know, across the state of Texas through Conference USA, so then they can truly get in these recruiting battles and win. I mean, before Scotty Walden got to UTEP, they didn't have an NIL collective. They didn't have plans for any kind of renovations with their own facilities, and now they're going to look at a new locker room in-house at the LKD for football. They're also looking to do that NIL program that's going on right now, the Goldmine Collective. So a lot has changed in such a short amount of time. Even a year ago, Steve, a lot of people were clamoring more Power 5 recruits, more Power 5 guys. And this year, you look at the roster, a lot of Power 5 transfers.
I'm so interested also to see that if, let's say, Nebraska beats up on UTEP pretty good in week one, how, and as games like that happen, right, and the Miners don't come out on top, and let's just say that they give up a lot of points, I'm interested to see how this coaching staff keeps the team up. I want to see how they keep the locker room going so that they come out each week and essentially just try to not let some of those type of performances linger and build up after a while. We've seen that too many times over the years, but again, young coaching staff, this staff is not afraid, they're not affected, they don't seem to have any fears at all. In fact, they're more offended by the fact that they're being written off out of the gate than they would any other type of projection.
I felt like last year they were checked out late October, the team and the coaching staff, and it was, I mean, the writing was on the wall. We illustrated that throughout the shows and everything, but you want to play at least for something come November, even if it's for pride, even if your record doesn't show it that you're going to have a winning season or anything like that. Play for pride. Play for some of the younger players. Play for the future of the program. And the first four games will challenge all of that. It's going to challenge the mental for this coaching staff and the team, and so they're going to have to rise to that occasion.
Well, their schedule eases up a lot in November. So, you know, if they've got a couple of wins heading into that period of time, then they might have a chance to finish with 5-6 wins if things break their way. That's kind of, to me, the best case scenario. But again, we'll dig deeper into that when we put together the preseason podcast for UTEP football.
Yeah, I'm ready. You talked me into it, Steve. I'm ready for it. I'm excited.
Fantastic. I know who else is excited. Charlie One, he's back. He's going to give us a traffic update here at 19 past as we continue. Past the hour as we continue here on Sports Talk. 505-6009, our telephone number, 505-6009. You know, we're like almost, I think we're 6 weeks away from the start of the UTEP football season, guys. 6 weeks, and we're going to be here. It's right around the corner.
I think we're like less than 50 away, 50 days away, yeah. I'm saying. And that's crazy. I mean, it's basically tomorrow. Before you know it, we're going to be talking about going to UTEP practices. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about just the lead-up and the build-up. There's a lot of battles. We alluded to it. Everything is going to be headlined by the quarterback battle. It's going to be a daily topic. You know, we obviously know Cade and Skylar Locklear on the other side. Is his opponent. Steve, I'll just say it because it's on the record, and he said it with us. J.P. Pickles and Shea Smith, the two young guys in that quarterback room, have made a lot of progress in this coaching staff size.
I'll say this, though, okay, and this is another point to bring up, and that is that if at some point in the season they're not winning, and let's just say that Cade is struggling and so is Skylar, you might see the young guys. I mean, I don't think this coaching staff is going to feel like they have anything to lose at any point. If they like to play with a gambling style on offense and defense, player personnel will probably be that way too. And they're just going to say next man up, and we're not worried about staying true to one guy. They might feel that they'll do whatever they need to do to try to win and turn things around.
If they are having success in the ground game, I see them committing to more of a mobile or dual threat type of quarterback. Yeah. So the two quarterbacks right there that fit that mold are Skylar Locklear and Shea Smith. On the flip side, if they're having success in the passing game, I feel like you get guys like Cade McConnell or J.P. Pickles in that mix, which is interesting, right? Because you got older receivers, Trey Goodman, Jaden Smith. You got guys like Amari White, who has experience, Judah Ezinwa. If those guys shine in that receiving game, not to mention the minor back spot with Cam Thomas and everybody else who plays that role, like Marquez Taylor, they could have some legit guys in that passing game.
It's fascinating to me that you have two quarterbacks that have one style and two quarterbacks have the opposite style, and it's essentially like that. I mean, you can mix and match depending on where you want to go, although we've noticed from Scotty Walden that he wants to stick with one quarterback. Like, he's not the kind of person that wants to throw two guys out at you every game. He wants one guy to be his guy, and that's why it will be interesting to see who wins the job in the fall.
You know, just to talk a little bit more about those young guys that we haven't talked enough about, J.P. Pickles, he didn't get any sort of playing time last year with the Miners, but he's somebody who is really, you know, redshirted that first season, really committing to the program, taller guy. guy. He is more of a field general in the, you know, as a pocket passing quarterback. But Chase Smith last year, Steve, did not play a lot of competitive football games. That was no fault to his own. He played with a real depleted Franklin team, and he was like an Iron Man out there. He was just RPO action, running the football, throwing it whenever they needed it. Helped win that, you know, West Side Bowl against Coronado. Felt single-handedly in that game. But that guy's just a gamer and a winner. So I'm curious to see, do they even give him a chance? You know, that freshman rule where you can redshirt players after playing them four games. I'd be curious to just see them throw out some multiple quarterbacks in the mix. But like you were saying, I'd lean to the fact that Scotty Walden likes one quarterback only for the whole season. I think he might commit to that.
I think so, too. As long as they stay healthy.
That's a big point.
Well, we know from last season, they went through four of them.
And the season before that, they go through two of them. And the season before that, somehow Gavin Hardison finishes out the year and they go to a bowl game, but they eventually lose. But, Steve, durability and the quarterback spot just don't usually happen at UTEP. It's, you usually see two, maybe even three quarterbacks because of injuries.
But does this style of offense protect the quarterback more than a traditional style, because you get up to the line of scrimmage and you have to quickly make a decision whether it's pass the ball or hand the ball off? You don't. This is not an offense designed to take 3 to 4 or 5 seconds to watch a play develop before you fire it. It seems almost like this is such a quick decision type of offense. I wonder if that could allow quarterbacks to be a little healthier because they have to get rid of the ball fast in one way or another.
I think that's definitely a good point. The other side to that is that if they do have the agile, quick, dual threat quarterback in at that spot, it leaves them susceptible to that injury that could happen eventually, you know, on the season. Now, the other side to it, if you're just not having success in the passing game and you're trying to think too much in the back, you know, as a quarterback in the backfield, that could lead to a lot of disasters too. Turnovers, holding the ball too long, getting sacked and stuff like that. And not to mention, it is an inexperienced offensive line.
Yeah. So again, lots of things for us to talk about. And then on the defensive side, we talked about that already. They have playmakers on the defensive side. They have experience there. They're deeper there. We can't wait for the season to start. That's just what it comes down to. Cannot wait for the season to start. And I will say this. I do believe UTEP will exceed their 9th out of 10th place prediction for Conference USA. I feel like with the league and the parity and the way it is, 9 out of 10 is probably like a 2-10 record. And I don't see this being a 2-win UTEP team. I still think they're going to have a chance to win more games than that and probably finish closer to the middle of the pack than they would the bottom.
So I say I agree, because the expectations that we had on the roster makeup are kind of there. There's only maybe 2-3 battles going on defense. On offense, there's about a handful plus of battles going on here at fall camp. But you look at a team like New Mexico State, I still don't know who's going to be playing at that quarterback spot for them. They have so many questions. Kennesaw State transitioning from FCS to FBS. There's still going to be a learning curve right there. La Tech has a quarterback battle going on right now. Who knows what happens over there? FIU's never won. Why are we thinking they're going to win at this point? And Sam Houston State, they made the transition last year from FCS to FBS. I think they're going to be okay, but maybe middle of the pack in CUSA. So all winnable games right there.
Just remember one thing about New Mexico State. Jerry Kill turned the corner when he found a quarterback. There was a period of time where Pavia wasn't getting it done. I think it was Frakes wasn't getting
done. Yeah, Gavin Frakes.
And he couldn't figure out who to run with because they were getting beat every week. And then all of a sudden, he saw a little something from Pavia, started going to him. He built up more confidence, started winning games, and the team turned a corner the second half of the 2022 season leading into 2023. So as great a job as Jerry Kill did with that club, he was getting pretty frustrated the first third of that 2022 season when his quarterbacks were giving him nothing. And knowing that, that's why getting a quarterback, whether it's UTEP, New Mexico State, or anybody, it is such an important part of a team's make or break season.
You know, it's interesting about that season in particular. Kill started out the gate so awful. Like, they were so bad out of the gate. UTEP beat them that year pretty handily, and that may have been one of UTEP's best win of 2022 when you look back on it. But that team, midway into the season, they found something, and they made a bowl game. So yeah, that, I mean, the path is there, right? Like, if UTEP starts out of the gate just terribly, just really looking tough, and then turns the corner a little bit, maybe they can have some momentum. I don't think a winning season is in the future for this team, but at least turn the corner enough to be competitive with this schedule ahead of them and how it softens up a little bit in November. You got Middle Tennessee, Kennesaw State, and New Mexico State in the month of November. I feel like those are three winnable games.
All right. Bottom of the hour as we continue. Let's get right back to Michael Plundo standing by with this SportsCenter update. Michael, we appreciate that. Excellent work as we continue 34 past. All right. So, Alberto, Michael, you've been listening to the two of us talk, Adrian, myself, about UTEP football, all what we see, everything so far as both sides of the ball, the schedule, the team, the season, the coaching staff, the expectations. How about the two of you? Where do you think this first season under Scotty Walden goes? Alberto, I'll give you first shot, then we'll let Michael chime in.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I'm going to sound like a broken record. You know, that to me, that most important game the whole season rides on Southern Utah. If you lose, it's going to be hard to come back, beat Sam Houston at home if you've already kind of lost confidence there. So, it's to me, it's kind of cut out for you there. All your road games are pretty much, I hate to say it, unwinnable. You know, you're not going to go out. You're not going to beat Liberty. You're not going to beat Nebraska. You're not going to beat Tennessee. So, if you can't win your home games, it's going to be a bad season because people are going to start buying out on this team.
You think? Now, that's another question, okay? Will they, Alberto, will they buy out if, despite losing, they're fun to watch? And I mean, okay, I'm going to give you an example. The 6-win Billy Gillespie team, because I did this, I was there for that, doing the same exact thing then as I'm doing now. That was a brutal season record-wise, okay? They were 6-24, but they drew fans because, believe it or not, they played such a tough style of ball, and Billy started crying after every press conference, which fans ate up, especially the ladies. Like, I don't know, Michael, if your mom was a UTEP fan back then, but I'm telling you, she would have dug this. Everybody did. It was hilarious. But, fans loved it. They were okay with it. They would stand. How about this? UTEP would lose games that season, and fans would stand and applaud at the end of games. Like, almost like they recognized that they gave everything they had. Fans were satisfied, and they had a feeling that things would get better. They obviously didn't realize what would happen the next year with Omar Thomas, Philly Rivera, the overnight turnaround, and going to a tournament team. But I'm using that as an example because fans did not let that record get them down as far as where they saw UTEP basketball.
I'm worried it's trendy to hate on UTEP.
Yeah, it exactly. is trendy to hate on UTEP. Yeah. But think about this, too. In 2004, okay, they were on the way down from Jason Rabideau, okay? Football was a train wreck because that was right before Mike Price showed up, and Gary Nord kind of lost control of his football team those last few seasons after winning in 2000. So it wasn't exactly like things were good and rosy for UTEP sports at that point in time.
It was splintered, and it feels like for football at this point right now, coming off a splintered season, they've got to try to capitalize on the momentum. And to Alberto's point, it's all excitement, it's all positive. But once the team takes the field, and if they fall below expectations, I'm curious if people will just jump on the trend and say, hey, it's fun to hate on UTEP. Let's just hate a little more.
20 years ago, we didn't have social media. And the truth is, what does social media do more than anything? It amplifies the feelings that fans have exponentially, either one way or the other. But that's what social media does. It's like you're taking lighter fluid and you're taking that gasoline fire and you are just turning it into an inferno. So you're right about that, because when Billy was here, we didn't have social media, and this was the show. This was it. What you're on right now, this was the pulse of UTEP sports in this town 20 years ago before social media. So now we have social media. We have podcasts. We have blogs. We have articles. We have all these different outlets. And we also have Twitter, X, Facebook, FitFam, and everywhere else to throw your opinions out there. So it's a totally different game now than it was back then. But again, back to the point. If they're fun to watch and they don't win, but they're exciting and they're not, you know, and fans are coming away thinking, all right, that was still some, we didn't win, but that was entertaining. There's some things to build on. Will fans hang in there longer, or do you believe they're out as soon as things go bad?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think so. I think that requires a fan base that is well informed on football and understands that the quality of play on the field has improved this year compared to last year.
Yep.
And that although they're not winning games, they're taking strike. That fan base isn't the UTEP fan base. You know, to me at least, it's not what I see. So
fair enough.
To me, it's going to be, oh, you lost? Did you win or did you lose? You lost? Same team. And so that's how I see it, because that's how I've lived it. That's how it is. And so until I see otherwise, that's what I think. Am I going to be on that train? No, I won't be on that train. You know, I'll analyze what they've done on and off the field and then make my assumptions there. But the city, I think that they'll quickly just be, did UTEP lose today, or did, what's the Twitter account called?
Did UTEP win?
Did UTEP win today? And so
it's either yes or no answer.
Yeah, so it's not a yes, but they played really hard.
Got lines ringing in. I want to get to these phone calls, and we come back. 20 in front of 6, we'll do that. We'll take a timeout. Phone calls next. Stay with us, folks. We'll also hear from Michael Plundo. I want to give him a chance to react as well. Sports Talk continues. 600 ESPN El Paso. Past the hour as we continue here on Sports Talk. All right. I've got Orly on the lines. We've heard from everybody but Michael Plundo on UTEP. I know you go to school at Texas Tech, but you grew up in El Paso. You've known UTEP for most of your life. You tell me. Give me your take on the 2024 season.
Well, I'm looking at the UTEP minor schedule right now, and it's just rough to start out, Steve. I mean, you have to go out all the way out to Nebraska the first game of the season. That's not an easy task at all. And then back in September 14th, you have to go all the way to Liberty up in Virginia, a very good football team. I don't think you're winning that. And then you follow it up, you have to go to Colorado to play Colorado State, a very good team as well that I think is being overlooked this season. So I don't know, Steve. I think it's just, you know, these first couple weeks are really going to define what type of identity this UTEP Miners football team really is. And I think Scotty Walden's is really going to put his guys up for the challenge. And I mean, hey, you know, the players seem to like him a lot. I mean, he's diving into the groups, and same with these coaches. So I really think UTEP could be a fun team to watch. I really do. I think, you know, with the traditional type of offense that they're going to go with and the defensive guys on that side of the ball. So there's going to be some fun moments for this team. But as far as winning season, I don't know about that.
All right. So let's go back to the phones. The Sports Talk continues. We've got Orly joining us next on the lines. Orly, welcome back, man. How are you?
I'm doing good, Steve. How about yourself?
Hey, we're doing well. Thanks. Long time no talk. Hang on. There you go, Adrian.
Long time no talk, Orly.
Yeah, it's been a long summer. It's a little busy, but I'm getting back around.
Good to hear.
I really, you know, I can't get involved when y'all talk soccer. You know, I'm not a soccer fan, so I just get turned off by the soccer talk, and that's all it is. I'm not into soccer. But anyway, you were talking about the Billy Gillespie years. Those were fun years, Steve. Yeah, there were 6 wins and 24 losses. But you're right. People stayed around. He was competitive. You have to remember who we were playing back then. People were familiar with those teams.
Yep.
They were playing, I believe they were still in the WAC. We were playing the Fresno States. I think we were playing TCU that year, too. We were playing some of the name universities. You know, the biggest complaint I get from people, and I tell them it's not UTEP's fault. It's nobody's fault. We've got to play who we play. They're not familiar with Conference USA. Now, when we joined Conference USA in 2004, yeah, people got used to the Houston, SMU, Central Florida, Memphis. As a matter of fact, Memphis and UTEP were playing some great challenges. And they got some great. But people are not excited about Kinawa State. How can you get excited about Sam Houston State? And you see what I'm saying? People, the familiarity of the teams, people are not real involved. They have no connection.
So here was your 10-team WAC in 2002, which was Gillespie's 6-win season, okay? You had Fresno State. They were the regular season champion. You had Tulsa as the conference tournament champ. You had Southern SMU. You had Nevada. You had Rice, Hawaii, La Tech, Boise State, and San Jose State.
Look at the difference in the teams that they're playing now compared.
Yeah, it's night and day.
Night and day, and that's why it's going to be difficult to get the fans back. Yeah, you start winning, they'll come back. But it's tough when – look at the competition Gillespie was up against. He had some good teams back then. Tulsa was good back then. I know we have no choice. We're in a very weak conference, name-wise, team-wise. But it is what it is, and we just got to support them. But, man, I sure miss those days of the WAC. Even the early Conference USA with the Memphis and Central Florida. They were, and even SMU's became a little bit of a rivalry with us back then.
Yep.
That's unfortunate. It changed, and now we're in a conference where people just don't know the teams. I mean, what do you know about Kenosha State?
It's Kennesaw State. Just imagine, you might as well get used to at least pronouncing them right. It's Kennesaw State.
You see what I'm saying?
Oh, I do. I mean, we didn't know much about Jacksonville State last year, and now they're projected to finish third in Conference USA in football. And their head coach is Rich Rodriguez, who we all know from his days in Michigan and wherever, and all the other spots he's been.
Matter of fact, he applied for the job before Dimmel, didn't he?
There was rumors about that, but I don't know if Rich Rod ever applied for the UTEP job.
The rumors were him and Casey Keeler, also from Sam Houston State, so everybody kind of was on their own trajectory, and along with Jerry Kill.
The only person that would know if in fact Rich Rodriguez did apply the year he hired Dana Dimmel would be Jim Senter, because that was the first hire he had about a month into the job.
Right. That was tough on him because he had just gotten into the job.
Yep. That's right.
So you can't blame him for this. See what happens. But, yeah, I hope we – he's got a brutal schedule to start the season.
No doubt.
I mean, it's going to be brutal. I think people will be happy he's competitive and shows a little offense. I think people were frustrated with the past coaching staff. They hated the style of football. Remember, when Price was here, he went 4, 7, 5, and 6, but he was throwing the ball over there. But he was running up scores. They were fun to watch.
Let's say they're fun to watch, but they're 1-3 out of their first four games. Are fans going to be still hanging in?
Just remember, if you got down 14 to Dimmel, you weren't coming back. You weren't coming back. He didn't have the offensive mind to come. If you got a wide-open offense, he can get down 14 and come back.
Yeah. That's true.
But with Dimmel, you're down. You're not going to come back, and everybody knew it. Hell, you could call the plays in the stands.
I don't think it's going to be as easy. I don't think it's going to be as easy for you to do that this time around.
No, I don't think so either. I think this guy. People are excited about him. But like I said, he's got a brutal start. I mean, the first three games are brutal.
They are.
Don't take that Southern Utah,
whatever,
Utah Valley. They're no slouch.
Now, Southern Utah last season played, again, Austin Peay, who won 9 games, and Austin Peay won that football game 48-45.
Right. And don't forget, Austin Peay went into Tennessee and gave them all they could handle.
They did. That's true.
So that's what you like about Wall. I just want an exciting type of football. I don't want to sit in the stands being down 14 and knowing the game's over.
Yeah, I hear you. Orly, appreciate it, man. Good to hear back from you. Thanks for the phone call. Have a great weekend. Hey, 30 minutes to go. Story time will be coming up as well with Hags. More in a moment, but first, we'll take a timeout here on 600 ESPN El Paso. We're so excited for a story time that we're playing the music, even though we're probably about 15
teasing
minutes
it.
Away. Yes.
The teaser.
We love that music. That is our favorite.
Lullaby. And he'll and Tim Haggerty on deck here 15 minutes from now.
Can't wait as we continue live from the 600 ESPN El Paso River Oaks Property Schoolyard Sports Studios, along with Michael Plundo, Alberto Dueta, Adrian Broaddus. I'm Steve Kaplan. It's good to have you back, folks. Good week, by the way. If you missed any of today's show or any of this week in general, you can check it out on demand wherever you get 600 ESPN El Paso, whether it's Sports Talk, Minor Talk, our special exclusive podcast that only air on that channel, or just whenever you want to catch up on anything. We've got it for you. On demand, 600 ESPN El Paso. Oscar Arrieta doing something very cool with UTEP fans involving Win the West. Tell us about it, Adrian.
Yeah, this is really exciting. The Win the West t-shirt contest. We're collaborating with them. They're doing it on their side. We're going to have giveaways on this show as well. But we actually have the contest up on the website right now. Win the West t-shirt giveaway. And it's up thanks to the Oscar Arrieta Agency. So the great team over there at the Oscar Arrieta Agency came to me and they had an idea. Hey, we love the concept of the body paint that Scotty Walden had when he stormed onto the UTEP men's basketball court and got fans amped up based off the body paint. And on the back, he had Win the West, and that's been the mantra for this UTEP football team all offseason leading into the actual season itself. For Scotty Walden and for this UTEP football team right now, it's all about the anticipation. It's about winning the West, and we have the Win the West t-shirt that is up right now. There's only one way to do it. Go on to our website, 600ESPNElPaso.com. I lied. There's three ways to do it. You can go there, enter your full name, your email, your phone number, give your t-shirt size as well, and this is one of those ways that you can get in and register for the contest. You could also visit Oscar Arrieta at the agency online, get their Win the West contest. So two ways to enter. And then you could also listen to 600 ESPN El Paso. We'll have weekly trivia. Our first winner that we're going to pick out will be next Friday. I was already seeing the submission list. Oscar Arrieta told me earlier today, Steve, they've already got 10 submissions from just the first day of launching this.
Wow.
We have close to like 15 already in day one of submitting this as well. So, yeah, Win the West t-shirt contest. It's up 600ESPNElPaso.com. Everybody in this building will also get one. So I'm excited for all of us to start our unboxing of the t-shirts themselves.
These are really, really cool. I think Oscar is, listen, he spares no expense whenever he comes up with a contest. This one, though, is going to get Miner fans really excited, aren't they?
I think they're going to be really excited. I mean, in fact, the cool thing was they gave me a bunch of boxes. They were like, hey, here are boxes for everybody. There was one for Scotty Walden. There was one for his wife, Callie, his son, Luca. So he actually gave the whole Walden family Win the West t-shirts. He had boxes and stuff for other UTEP personalities and coaches like Ben Wallace, you know, Joe Golding. He made one for Joe Golding himself as well. So everybody's got like these like personalized boxes. Today, when I went over there to the Oscar Arrieta at the agency, they gave me a box and they said, hey, Adrian, do you know a guy named Jason Craig? He messaged us and he really wants a box. And we don't really know how to get it to him. I said, of course, we'll hook him up. We got Jason Craig one. So he's got one here at our River Oaks Property Schoolyard Sports Studios. And I think everybody's going to want to get their hands on the Win the West t-shirt. They look really nice. They're nice Columbia blue, but the orange traditional pickaxe on the front, and then on the back it says Win the West.
It's essentially a t-shirt version of the body paint that Scotty Walden had during volleyball and men's basketball.
Right. I mean, how funny of an instant was that? And, you know, it's funny when I showed head coach Scotty Walden the shirt, he was dying. He loved the fact that this was, you know, kind of he started this. He was like, this trend right here of Win the West and the body paint. The Oscar Arrieta at the agency is going to be doing a lot of things all the way up to kickoff, Steve, including cash prizes, contests, giveaways, all on this radio station when it comes to winning the West and this UTEP football team.
Do we know what the true definition of Win the West is in terms of, because you could say the West meaning West Texas. You could say the West meaning the western part of the United States. There is no Western Conference left in Conference USA anymore. There's just right now, 10 teams, and that's it. So do we know specifically what Win the West is referring to?
It's interesting. I asked, that was the first question I asked to Coach Walden, which is coming up on the Minor Talk On Demand episode here in the next week or so. Now, Coach Walden, he broke it up into four-part answers, Steve. So one of the answers to that one, it's like four different meanings, and one of them was West Texas, winning mm-hmm. West Texas, winning the region, winning when it comes to recruiting, showing everybody what it means to be a part of West Texas and El Paso. He really wants that mantra to resonate not only statewide, not only regionally, but across the country and, statewide and when this UTEP football program is viewed, on the nation or as a nation.
Okay, that makes sense. And again, easiest way for people to get their hands on one of these, these limited edition T-shirts from Oscar Arrieta for Win the West, what is the best way for fans to do?
Just check out 600 ESPN El Paso. Paso.com, enter basic information. All it asks for is name, phone number, email, and your shirt size. That's all you have to do. We'll pick a random winner next Friday. They'll be going home with the Win the West t-shirt. They come in nice boxes too, Steve. I'm excited for you to unbox yours. They already personalized one. I've got one in my office for you, so you're going to have your own personal one. Alberta's got one. Michael's got one. We got one for the whole crew. Cade's got a personalized one as well. So, we're ready to really win the West with these Win the West t-shirts right here. They're only exclusive. We're not going to sell any of these, by the way. Mm-hmm. It's a collaboration with 600 ESPN El Paso and Oscar Arrieta and the Oscar Arrieta Agency, official insurance agent of the Miners. They'll have a booth each and every game, all five home games for UTEP football. But if you don't get a chance to visit their booth to try to win one of these shirts, you can win one on our website, 600ESPNElPaso.com.
I have one more question on Win the West, and then we'll be done with it. Is Win the West a hashtag for 2024? Or is Win the West the Scotty Walden hashtag as long as he's at UTEP? Will this be something that will never go away, that will be essentially his trademark, his rallying cry? Or is this something that's just happening for season one of UTEP?
This should resonate year over year, because I feel like the real true motto of this year's team, and that he keeps saying it, is why not us? Why not us? That's year one. And I'm cool with that. Like every year, teams try to come up with their own mantra or motto to pump their team up and, mm-hmm. To lean on. UTEP men's basketball unveiled the 1033. That's their mantra. That's their motto that they're going to lean on all offseason long, talking about the Western Kentucky game, how they fell short in that championship game, and how they're looking to bounce back and fight all this offseason for the 10 minutes, 33 seconds of that CUSA title game. So for football, I hope this is not necessarily a season-wide model. I hope Win the West is like a continuous thing. You could use it in recruiting. You could use it in transfer portal. You could use it when you're talking about winning, actually like winning on the field itself, or even what you're doing in the classroom. So I think there's a lot of ways you can use it.
10 past the hour as we continue here on Sports Talk. Also, want to let everybody know before Charlie gives us one last traffic update and we come back with story time with Hags, that Hacienda de Mesilla is available for dining deals. It went live at 10 a.m. and it has sold well today, but there are still opportunities for you to take advantage, especially if you are a dining deals customer like we are. This is an establishment, folks, in Mesilla that, simply put, is one of the best you're going to find anywhere. And this gives you the chance to enjoy $50 to Hacienda de Mesilla for just $25. I went online and had a chance to see all the different menu items, all the different steaks, seafood items. I mean, they've got everything. For me personally, the blue crab enchiladas were spectacular, absolutely spectacular. But I'll tell you what else. I mean, I went through that menu, and steak, tons of seafood, salmon. You've got just a lot of classic dishes. They've got tacos, burgers, salads, soups. And oh, by the way, There's a boutique hotel with 12 rooms attached to the Hacienda de Mesilla. So, Adrian, if you would like to make a weekend getaway and enjoy that boutique hotel, you can apply the $50 to that if you'd like to.
It's a great deal, Steve. 39 minutes away from this radio station is Hacienda de Mesilla. That's awesome. And not to mention the fact that you get to go to the beautiful Mesilla area out in Las Cruces. I love going out there. Just beautiful. You talk about the mornings over there, lunch, dinner. It's just a perfect getaway. And it's only 39 minutes away from this radio station. Sign me up. This sounds like an amazing deal for dining deals.
It really is. And I promise you this, when I start going through that menu, I'll get you hungry. That's easy for me. I mean, it won't even have to try. And I can go for anything from classics like the Hacienda Burger to the filet to the Hacienda Arrechera Steak. I could go also to the pecan-crusted Atlantic Salmon, to the Chilean Sea Bass, which is terrific, to Hacienda-style crab cakes, the, as I mentioned, blue crab, blue corn, green chili enchiladas. Spectacular, folks. So it doesn't matter what you want. Chicken penne a la vodka. They've got that as well. A lot of great items, including pork chops and everything else you can imagine. Their fundido is terrific. They also have a spicy tuna avocado tower. And Adrian, it's all available now with Dining Deals.
You know, Steve, I'm looking at it. They also do a brunch specialty menu as well. Hacienda, green chili and hash, egg skillet. They have that as well. They have shrimp and grits, which is great. Churro French toast. Mm. Wow, that sounds fantastic. Hacienda steak and eggs. So if you're looking for a brunch spot as well, you know, you talk about the staying the night out at Hacienda de Mesilla. You could actually take advantage of some of their brunch specialties as well.
Okay, hopefully we got you hungry. That's our idea. We want to get you hungry. When we come back, story time with Hags. It's next, 600 ESPN El Paso.